or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of June 5th, 2016. I'm Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor of Information Week, and your host for this episode of Information Week Live. I think it's going to be a great episode because we've got two great panelists on for this episode, two folks that you've heard before, always here with fascinating insight and some great stories to share. First up, we have Charlie Babcock, Editor-at-Large for Information Week. Charlie, welcome to Information Week Live.
Kurt, always a pleasure to be here.
And we have Kelly Sheridan, our Assistant Editor and Global Correspondent for Information Week. And Kelly, where are you coming to us from this week?
Hi, Kurt. Thanks for having me. I am currently calling in from Cusco, Peru, where I moved last Sunday. That's where I am for this month.
Well, now, I've got to ask, Cusco, when I think of Cusco, I hate to say this, but I always see it with that yellow National Geographic border around it because it's just that kind of city. But is it a high-tech kind of place where you have lots of digital nomads working these days?
Cusco is an interesting dynamic. So I just moved here from La Paz, Bolivia, where there were very few expats, very few remote workers. You mostly interacted with the locals, but here it's more of a mix. There are people who live and work here, but I would say that there are far more tourists and backpackers than there are remote workers. That said, because it is a tourist city, the infrastructure here is a little better when it comes to remote working because there are more Wi-Fi equipped cafes and places like that. So there's more variety in just like the opportunities to work around the city.
Well, you know, I've got to ask before we get into this week's stories, you've been doing this now for 3 or 4 months. And on the whole, what do you think about the digital nomad lifestyle? Is it something that is possible for getting work done on a regular basis, or is it still a real struggle to try and keep up with what's going on back in New York and San Francisco?
For me, the transition has been much easier than anticipated. I think it's partly because our team is just remote by nature. You know, we're all over the country, so we're already used to working together over calls and over emails and over Google Docs and stuff like that. The lifestyle itself, I think, it varies from job to job. Some people have had trouble staying updated because, like, we have people from all over the world. So obviously, like, if you're working for a company based in Australia and you're living in South America, the time zone difference can be a challenge. But so far, so good. I haven't had to deal with that problem really yet. So I'm loving it, you know.
Outstanding. Well, we're certainly loving having you be part of both Information Week and Information Week Live. It's great hearing you call in from different places, keeping up with what you're doing, and it's very exciting. Now, I've got to ask, looking ahead, where is next? Where do you go to from Cusco?
From Cusco, we leave South America for the first time in 4 months, so that's going to be a big change. And we are headed to Europe, where our first stop is London.
London. Tiny little town. I hope you're able to find decent connectivity there.
I think of all the cities, that'll probably be the easiest. I'm actually hoping to make a stop at UVM's offices at least once or twice while I'm there.
It is cool. I have walked past UVM's offices in London. I've never gone in, but I will say that London is, in my experience, a very easy place to have the same sort of experience you would have in, you know, any major metropolitan area. The thing that I appreciated a great deal, though, was that there are more bookstores in London than there are in pretty much any American city, and that's a fabulous, fabulous thing. So we'll look forward to your reports from London. But want to dive into the stories of the week. And Charlie, you and I were talking before we went on the air about this wonderful story that you did on India. Tell us what's going on around India in the high-tech world this week.
Well, Kurt, Jeff Bezos attended a trade summit in Washington where the Indian Prime Minister was present, and he received an award there because of his interest in building Amazon, the retail operation, Amazon India in India. He committed to a $5 billion investment in expanding operations there. Amazon was previously known to be willing to spend a couple billion. And he clearly views it as the next big potential market for Amazon and e-commerce. India has a population of 1.25 billion. It is expected to overtake China in population in about 7 years, according to UN population studies. It happens at the moment to have an economy that's growing faster than China, the UK, or the US, and that's a pretty impressive thing. And the population is much younger in general than European countries and the US. So moving into India at this time and having a larger e-commerce presence, Bezos is 100% committed to. He jokes that he's gotten his last two haircuts in India. He comes and goes there so much. And he is going to start spending money to ensure delivery of orders throughout the Indian population. But the funny thing is, and kind of a break on all of that kind of rosy prognosis, is that there's only a small percentage of the population that actually has access to the internet now. And that's going to have to grow awfully fast for these hopes and dreams to materialize for Amazon. It's about a quarter of the population accesses the internet through smartphone or computer. I'm not sure how quickly that'll change. Go ahead.
It's interesting that you mentioned the smartphone aspect, because I know in conversations that I've had with people who are working in different developing nations, the majority of internet activity and internet access actually happens on smartphones or even on feature phones, which are still a big part of that market, rather than laptop or other computers. And to me, the really fascinating piece, and the one that I'm going to be interested to see how Amazon tackles, is that there's also a huge portion of the population that is, in the language of the financial industry, unbanked. And that means that they don't have bank accounts and they don't have credit cards. And for them, in many cases, the cell phone system has become their de facto bank. They're putting credits on their smartphone account or their cellular phone account and using that to pay for various things. Is that something that Bezos has talked about at all?
Not that I know of, but I'm sure it figures into his plans. And the fact is, the Indian population won't have to wait for Apple iPhone prices to come down or something like that to get a smartphone. And waiting for that might be like waiting for Godot. Instead, they can buy smartphones that are made by the Chinese and that are selling at much lower prices in India. And I would expect a significant percentage of the population would do what you just described. They'd get a smartphone, they'd have an account, they'd have credit on it, and bingo, they are shopping on Amazon the next thing you know.
Kelly, I want to turn to you because you are spending time in places that have different infrastructures than we have in North America. Is the notion of internet access through mobile devices and even financial services through mobile devices something that any of your compatriots talk about or something that you've observed in South America?
It's interesting because I would say that just like the smartphone culture in general here is less, what's the word for it? It's less intense, definitely, than back in the States where people walk around with their smartphones out all the time. Like in the places that I've been, you very rarely see someone walking around with a cell phone out. I mean, partly for security reasons, but partly because people just don't, it seems people don't rely on them as much. And it's interesting that some of the comments that Charlie was making, because I wrote a story this past week on smartphone sales are continuing to fall, and a lot of smartphone vendors are looking to markets like China and India, where feature phone sales are the majority of phone sales, and especially in India. I think the data says that feature phone sales made up 61% of phone sales in 2015. So there's a lot of potential for smartphone growth there.
Well, it's going to be fascinating, as you say. I know that the phone manufacturers from China are attacking this in a huge way. Apple has taken what I will call a fairly timid step in that direction with things like the iPhone 5C. But there are, it's a huge market, no question. And not only for voice communications. That was one of the things that, and I don't want to delve too deeply into politics, but I heard people levy criticism of some of the refugees from Northern Africa as they were coming into Europe, saying, oh, look, these people can't be that poor. They have cell phones. And yet for many of those individuals, that cell phone is their only communications device. It allows them to communicate via phone, text, internet with anyone around them. And there are nations like Brazil where there are entire employment services that are based on access to feature phones. So this is, I think, Charlie, with Amazon looking at this, there's an entire infrastructure issue that's going to need to be worked out before they can have the same impact in India that they've had here. But Bezos has certainly shown that he's willing to invest. I'm curious, where do you think this is going to go? Do you see this as one of those things where for his shareholders he has to say that he wants to go into India, or does it strike you as something that he's genuinely interested in pursuing?
Well, he's shown very little interest to say the things that might soothe shareholders in the past. So I'm going to say it's the opposite. His belief in e-commerce and electronic systems over physical systems, and his instincts are telling him to go to India, and he'll try to make good on that.
Well, outstanding. This is going to be a story that I think we're going to be following for a long time, because a lot of people don't realize that India is predicted to pass China in total population sometime in the next 5 to 10 years. And that has the potential to change the balance of all sorts of things around the world. So absolutely an area that bears much more watching. So I'm glad you're on this, and Kelly, glad that you're on these topics. And turning to your topics, what big stories were you following this week?
So I wrote a couple of stories this week about the bleak outlook for the smartphone and PC markets. So yesterday I published a story on how the PC market overall around the world is continuing to struggle. And another set of data came out earlier in the week indicating that smartphone sales are also still growing, but at a slower pace. So that market is slowing down as well. I thought it was interesting that both of those reports came out, both came out in the same week.
Well, now I'm curious, the people who are doing these reports, do they think it's because the market is maturing? Do they think that people are holding on to devices longer? Are we all going back to abacuses and legal pads? What's going on with the market to cause the slowdowns?
Well, with the smartphone market, there are a few reasons. Most of the reason is people are just holding on to premium smartphones for longer. I think the average life cycle is about 2.5 years, which is a time period that nobody really expects to change. So I guess, smartphones are just being made to be more durable, and people don't really see a reason to upgrade either because, I mean, based on what I'm seeing, the new smartphones that are coming out don't really give people much of a reason to upgrade, you know? I think, the changes from the iPhone 6 to the iPhone 6S, for example, like there weren't very many exciting features. Like nothing made me go like, oh wow, like I can't wait to get my hands on the iPhone 6S. You know what I mean? So I think just like in general, I think there's an innovation lag, I guess. So it'll be interesting, especially because Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference is coming up on Monday, and they're expected to unveil a new smartphone this year, and everybody's wondering, will it have the innovation that people are looking for?
Well, I have seen a lot of the guesses going on in the news outlets that focus on Apple rumors and Apple products, and I have to say that There seem to be a lot of interesting bits of speculation out there, everything from two cameras to getting rid of the small headphone jack in favor of doing headphones through the Lightning port, but nothing that's truly, you know, earth-shattering. Is that what you're hearing, or are you hearing, you know, groundbreaking theories that I just haven't caught up with?
I'm not really hearing anything earth-shattering either. And I think that Apple and I guess smartphone makers in general are in a place where it's tough to come up with the next big thing. You know, what else can the smartphone do that it doesn't already do, you know? So it'll definitely be interesting to watch this year, especially because there are so many makers in the competition. But for the most part, I haven't really heard, just like you, I haven't heard anything that makes me go like, oh, wow, I can't wait for the next smartphone to come out. You know, all of the rumors I'm hearing kind of make me want to keep my hands on the device that I already have.
Well, Charlie, I want to turn to you because one of the areas that you keep a big eye on is the open source world. And it seems that to a greater or lesser extent, the smartphone universe has been immune to open source. Is that something that's a wrong perception, or are there some reasons that you can think of that we haven't seen lots and lots of open source phones?
You know, that's a good question. One of the key innovations that Apple did successfully implement was the soft keyboard, and then tying many phone features into that soft keyboard, something that was extremely difficult to do when you had the push keys, the tension keys. And there's no reason why you can't kind of continue that innovation even further by doing what Google is trying to do, and that is come out with a phone that's composed of a set of standard physical modules that you could probably buy at the level of performance that you're looking for and assemble into a phone. The Android operating system is open source, and we can't say that it's been a dismal failure. It hasn't succeeded the way that I thought it should and would, because to me, Google did not have enough experience administering a big open source project like Android. Nevertheless, Android is a very large presence and will continue to grow and be used by many different manufacturers. If you could combine that open source with a kind of open source hardware, which is how I think of the Google modular phone, you might then have a candidate to gradually perfect itself into something that is a true rival of the iPhone. And open source would kind of come into its own in the smartphone field if it could do that. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but I watch with great interest, and I kind of wish we had a bigger open source presence permeating the smartphone market. It would be good for that market.
Well, you know, to me, one of the interesting things about the market, as you say, the Android market is, Android is, to a greater or lesser extent, open source. It's pretty much open source. But one of the reasons that we're given for Android not having a bigger impact on the enterprise market is that there are about 900 different versions of Android out there. And
yes,
it's tough for an enterprise IT manager to either require a particular distribution of Android or to create and deploy software that will work on all of them. So, and yet, we've seen other forms of open source. Linux is pretty much ubiquitous in the enterprise. It's hard to find any company of any size that's not running Linux somewhere in their infrastructure. So to me, there's that very interesting thing about that nut that they haven't been able to crack with Android about bringing any kind of real discipline to the distributions.
Yes, exactly. Linux succeeded because there are many Linux distributions with their differences, but the kernel in them is managed by the Linux Kernel Development Group, managed by a benevolent dictator in the form of Linus Torvalds, and had that discipline, had that kind of will imposed on how it could be modified and how it couldn't be modified. Android just didn't have that, and like you say, many different versions enterprise can adopt without taking on the task of supporting several what might as well be varied operating systems, and no one wants to do that. Apple had the discipline to create a singular mobile operating system and stick to it, and that has made it a much greater success in the enterprise. It just seems to me we could do the Android thing better than we did. That could still happen if the Android manufacturers would recognize the liability that they have built into the system for themselves.
Well, Kelly, I'd like to turn to you and ask, I saw somewhere that someone was talking about Microsoft being an increasingly open source company. I know that you keep your eyes closely on Microsoft and its going-ons. Do you get the sense that Microsoft sees open source software as a greater part of its future?
That's a good question. I've noticed over the last year that I've been watching Microsoft that Satya Nadella definitely has a more open approach to software. So I would say absolutely, and I think we're going to see more of that from them, especially in the years to come.
Well, it's certainly been interesting to go ahead, Charlie.
I would second that in the sense that Microsoft now realizes it not only has to selectively work with key pieces of open source, but that the whole open source process is an efficient one and that it can bring many different parties together in a way that's hard for one company to do. And if you can get a key product to function as open source, it can take over a market without a big marketing budget, a big sales force, et cetera, et cetera. It's, if it kind of infiltrates for free in a sense, and many people cooperate on continuous improvement, that's a marketplace winner these days. Driving that as a singular company is no longer a very practical consideration. So Microsoft is seeing what it has to compete with, what it has to cooperate with, possibly what it has to move toward becoming itself. It wouldn't surprise me if they try to do something a little more radical. I'm not 100% sure that making Windows open source by itself would accomplish that. But if they had an effective open source mobile operating system, that might get them further in both the tablet and the smartphone game than they've been able to get kind of on their own. And in effect, they have taken several steps in that direction, and they've made the languages and tools that support Windows, that develop applications for Windows, made them open source. So that's really a very big step in that direction.
We've got lots of things that we're going to be watching in the future. One of the great things about the industry, at least from the point of view of journalists like us, is that it's so rare to hit a point where we get a story and we say, well, you know, that's the end of that story. Nothing else is going to happen. This is it. We can close the books. We have difficulty just closing the books on technologies or products here in the industry, and that's a fine thing in terms of keeping us all employed. Well, we've hit the time when we're going to be talking about what's coming up, speaking of future employment. And Kelly, want to turn to you first. What's going on in your part of the tech world in the coming week? What should we be looking for from you in the coming days?
So starting early next week, I will be reporting on Apple because they're holding their Worldwide Developer Conference starting on Monday. So I'm going to have a couple pieces coming out on that, and it'll definitely be interesting to see what we see from them.
Outstanding. And how can people keep up with all of your adventures on social media?
You can follow me on Twitter, where my handle is Kelly Sheridan, last name Sheridan 22.
We will absolutely do that. Kelly, thanks so much for calling in. Hope you have a great weekend there in the Andes.
Hope you have a great weekend too, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
Well, Charlie, I know that you are not in the Andes, but what's on your radar screen for the coming week?
Yeah, I'm much closer to sea level here in San Francisco, but I would like HP Enterprise has been having its Discovery customer meeting in Las Vegas this past week. They've talked about what they call the machine, their new concept for a computer of the future. I'd like to do something on what are some of the ideas being rolled into the machine and how HP is trying to further its development now by making it a more open project. And I'd also like to take a look at a young company, Cluster HQ, as it thinks about how containers are being used in the enterprise. It will release a report on that next week and its own possibility of furthering that use.
We will certainly look forward to that. And with all that you're doing, how can we keep up with you on social media?
Primarily through Twitter at Babcock CW, and of course by scoring those hits on informationweek.com.
Well, Charlie, thanks for taking time out of a busy day to be with us today. We very much appreciate it.
Great to be here, Kurt. Appreciate the chance to talk.
Well, as for me, I've got a piece coming up in Information Week on the various tools that can be used to develop applications if you don't want to learn how to code, the no-code app development efforts out there. This is a huge area, and it's growing. So looking forward to getting some comments on that from folks who have used it. I've had a couple of recent articles on books, and probably going to be looking at some more books in coming weeks. It's that time of year when we take books on vacation with us, and I'm always fascinated by what the executives in IT take with them to the beach or to the mountains to read in their off time. Now, for all of this, you can find me, of course, on informationweek.com or follow me on Twitter at KG4GWA. Well, thank you so much for being with us for another week. Now, we're here every week at 3 p.m. Eastern. And if you're listening to this in a streaming or podcast version, we appreciate it. But we'd love to have you with us on the live episode. You know, there is a live online text chat that goes on with the radio program every week at informationweek.com. We'd love to have your voice in that conversation. So look us up and drop in some Friday afternoon. I personally think it's a great way to ease into the weekend. Well, for Kelly Sheridan, Charlie Babcock, and all of us here at Information Week Live, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you next time.